Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
This is a band called the Rolling Stones. Have you heard of them?
Seen them live many times.
Okay, so just checking because apparently, now I got kind of an eye opener during a break. We were talking and you said I was born in 83, man. Like, So that was a bit of a shock to me because.
How old did you think I was?
No, not that. Just that I forget that, you know, like, so basically anything that happened before 1980 is a rumor to you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I like to believe.
I graduated high school the year before you were born.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's,
I'm 53.
That's the thing about reference points, right? Like, I get into this sometimes on the show. Like, Noodles is I think, 12 years older than I am. But Noodles is a young 47.
My first year, I started in broadcasting in April of 1983. What month were you born in?
I was born in June.
So I started before you were born. Oh, my God.
Yeah. How's that for a reality
17.
Check? Yeah. Well, I wasn't 17 when I broke into the industry, I can tell you that. So you got me
anyway, I'm just checking to make sure that you've heard
I'm aware of the Stones. Okay. I mean, I'm aware of Beethoven.
Carney Lansford seems to have eluded you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are general references, you know, I'm aware of. But you can't sneak in a, hey, remember when this guy was hitting in the 8-hole in 1978 for the White Sox? No, I don't remember that. But the Stones I'm aware of. The Stones I'm a massive fan of. One of my all-time favorite bands.
I made a huge mistake with the Stones. Okay, so 1981, okay, they're touring, and my buddy Mark Furstino's brother is at the University of Colorado, okay? And he's got 4 tickets to the Stones concert for us. So we go down to Mark's Datsun B210. You won't remember that as a car.
No.
Imagine a very small, low-slung car.
Like a Kristen Chilton car is what you're saying.
Because
Kristen drives.
Kristen Chilton has a clown car.
That's what I've heard. I got to see this. But
she has a car you could carry. If your car broke down, you could carry it home.
Right.
But anyway, this is a very small car. We drive from Edmonton, okay, to Boulder, Colorado. Because Rolling Stone magazine says it's the Stones' final tour.
1981?
They would know.
Right.
Would they not?
Well, you would think. But the Stones convinced everybody. In 1994, they did that.
We sat in the upper deck, in the second last row, at the wrong end of the stadium. So the stage is at the other end of the stadium. You couldn't have had worse seats. And the problem was, there were exams being taken at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what I did that summer? Summer school.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you
because
didn't
really. It was, you know.
It was worth the story, though. Now here you are in 2018, and who cares about the exam? No one cares what you did with the exam. But you've got a cool story about going to see the Stones in Denver.
And having the worst seats in the house.
Right.
And well, I've seen them 10 times since.
See, were you at SARS stock when the Stones were there? So I was there, too. But I don't even remember where I was standing. But basically, if you were not within the first 5,000 people towards the stage, you had awful seats. You couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
Couldn't really hear anything. The acoustics were terrible up at Downsview. I wasn't probably in the right state of mind to begin with. I mean, that was towards the end of the night and...
Yeah.
You know, we got there pretty early. If I could, and it was like this kind of heat. Remember that?
Yeah, it was hot.
And it was excruciating.
And they did a
hot.
Thing, and they did, because Molson paid for that, right? And they had their executives there, and the Stones are going to meet them. And the security guy says, you know, give us all your phones. Like, what? Just give us all your phones. So everyone did. No pictures allowed.
Policy of the band?
Thanks.
Wow.
I met Charlie Watts one day it's now the Fairmont in Winnipeg, was in a Weston.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome. I had breakfast with
Sounds
him.
Sounds like he's like the coolest guy in the world.
He might be the normal Rolling Stone.
Well, that's what I've always heard, is that the way it goes with the Stones is Mick wants to be Keith, but they all want to be Charlie Watts.
Yeah.
Like, because he's the normal cool guy. He's into arts. He's into different music.
Jazz bands.
He's been married the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the story with Charlie Watts is he has not slept in a bed without his wife since like 1962 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like literally, she's on all the tours and everything.
He's one of the richest Stones.
Wow. There's five of them.
So Bill Wyman, the bass player, was like a sex maniac. Like he was the secret sex maniac. His book was basically...
the bass player.
Bill Wyman's book was basically a listing of all his conquests on the road.
Mm-hmm.
He kept a diary of all the women he slept with. That's what his book was.
Wow. I mean, being a part of the Stones...
Yeah.
probably not the most difficult pickups.
No,
let's be honest.
But let's be honest, staying in that lifestyle, like that's a that's the
well, he pulled the chute. Like Wyman was the first one out.
He smoked two packs during concerts. Mm-hmm. Like, he always had a cigarette burning on his bass, right?
Well, it, like Richards does the same thing. Ronnie Wood does the same thing for the most part. I mean,
Ronnie Wood is turning into some kind of lizard.
Well, you talk about drinking problems. Like Ronnie Wood, he continues to have them, and they, like, I've heard stories of Ronnie Wood drinking like pints of vodka.
And he's a great artist, right? Ron Wood's a great artist.
Anyway, phone lines are open 416-870-1050. Yeah, there's stuff going on in the sports world. I think Steve Phillips, is he calling in here? Okay, so we'll get back to the phone calls a little bit later in the hour.
Stay with us. We'll get to you.
Yeah, we will. Well, we got a bunch of calls, and we got people texting and tweeting in, but a lot of people still want to talk about Tavares and the Maple Leafs, but Marcus Stroman putting himself back in the news again last night. Just an awful outing. His ERA is up to 6.5. We had Ross Atkins on yesterday, and I tried to get to the idea of opening yourself up as an organization for trades that feature players that don't have expiring contracts. I mean, we all expect Hap to go at any point. Donaldson's it's a wild card. Who knows what's going to happen with him? If Estrada wasn't injured, I think that was going to be probably a trade asset for them. Clippard, you know, guys out of the bullpen. Here's our TSN Jays insider, Steve Phillips. What do you make of this with Stroman, Steve? I mean, his numbers are terrible. We know that he was on the DL for a long time, and no one really knew exactly why he was on the DL. And last night, no control, leaves the game early, gives up six earned. What's your take on Stroman?
Yeah, it's hard to figure right now. I mean, it's been so bad. Now, I really do think arm fatigue was a factor early that led to some bad mechanics compounding the problems. Now, his last time out, before this one, I thought it was a little bit better. He wasn't taking his hands up. They should be coming down, which was a mechanical flaw that he had going on, which was allowing him to get back out in front on top of his breaking ball and on top of his fastball. But he didn't have it this time around. And so you wonder whether it's still kind of a spring training performance because he missed so much period of time that he's working his way back in. But he wasn't able to make any adjustments at all. And once again, looked very mortal for a guy who was effectively, a number one, number two type starter last year for the Jays. He was excellent. And so, they're not going to give up on him because they've seen the greatness there. And I think that, the way scouts look at it is if you've seen it once, it's in there. Now it's up to the coaching staff and the medical staff to get him to repeat it, to get him back on to the right track. So they've got some time to do it. My guess is that, look, there's no sense trading him right now because people on the other side buying would say, well, I'm not sure he's healthy, and I'm not sure what's going on, so I don't want to give you a lot. So what behooves the Jays is get him right, get him productive, let him pitch well, and that will either empower you and to keep him, and let him be part of your future, or to trade him. But right now, there's no sense even considering moving him at all.
Steve, it's unusual in baseball to see a player drop off this dramatically, isn't it? I mean, there's a few examples, but for the most part, to see a guy plummet like this is pretty unusual, isn't it?
It is, and it makes you think health. I mean, that's always the first thing you think of. When a guy's not right this significantly, you think health. You know, how many times do you see a pitcher who's actually pitching in the game, and he's getting knocked around, gives up a home run, and the next thing you know, they're going out there to talk to him on the mound. He's coming out of the game with the trainer. You know, something's physically not right. Yeah. Guys try to pitch through it. And so, the typical explanation for a guy this age, who's really just, entering into what could be the prime of his career, to have kind of taken a reverse course, you almost always think there's something physically going on. And, we know that he had the arm fatigue in spring training. We know they put him on the DL for that, whether that was the phantom DL to get his head right or to get his arm right. I think he was on it for so long that I think it literally was an arm issue. And maybe he's still not quite right. Because for a pitcher, when you have a shoulder issue or an elbow issue, the last thing to come back is that last little bit of proprioception, that ability to manipulate the baseball to throw it within the strike zone where you want it. Your velocity can come back. You can throw a strike. It just might not be where you want it to be in the spot that you want it to be. And certainly he doesn't have that command right now. So something's still not quite back 100%.
With Steve Phillips, and the difference between Stroman struggling and probably any other Jay is his profile with the team, with the fan base, the importance he places on brand. You know, height doesn't measure heart. You know, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, all that kind of stuff, and he's caused some storms here in Toronto with management. I mean, we know about the tweets after the arbitration case. We saw what he tweeted out after Ryan Goins was let go. That's what separates him from everybody else, is because of who he is and because of some of the stuff that he's been up to as a Blue Jay. And I'd be curious to get your take on that, Steve. I mean, you got to be careful. Yeah. The guy's got immense talent, but I kind of feel like he's the type of guy that if he does struggle, you turn on him quicker, or potentially could turn on him quicker.
Yeah, oh, no doubt, right? I mean, listen, we all know you can stir it up a little bit, and you can stir it up, you know, the better you are, the more you can stir it up. The more problems you can kind of create, the more you can say the wrong thing, and we're going to be like, all right, well, we'll manage it instead of getting rid of you. You know, I always looked at Ozzie Guillen in Sequoia, and I thought to myself, well, everybody keeps saying, well, it's just Ozzie being Ozzie. And I kept saying, well, as soon as they start to lose, those are going to be the reasons they fire him. And they were. And I think that for Marcus, he has had a significant impact. I was just down in Cary, North Carolina, and I was broadcasting some games for Team USA. They were at 18 and under trials. They had the college players in there. And they all fill out these questionnaires and surveys. The number of players, young players coming out, whose favorite player is Marcus Stroman was shocking to me. Shocking to me. Like, so his presence in social media and his brand has really found a niche. It's found a way into some of the kids. They get him and they like him and they follow him. But, you know, you've got to back it up, right? I mean, it can't just be about persona and brand. At some point, it's got to be about performance if you're going to sustain any level of connection and have the sort of impact that you want in the social media. So, he's been a headache a few times. You know, they've addressed it the way they should address it behind the scenes. But, you know, at some point, it's noise from a guy who's not performing, and it's the reason they'll trade him instead of just saying, well, it's Marcus being Marcus.
Steve, the Yankees are coming in tomorrow, and You know all about the home runs, and Aaron Judge has got 24 already. I think have they set the record now for the most home runs before the All-Star break? They're right at it, I think. I mean, it's incredible, but the thing that amazes me is in today's game, Steve, how it's okay to strike out a lot. Do you think the Yankees, with this kind of team where you know, Judge has struck out 114 times this year, Giancarlo Stanton struck out 115 times already, in the postseason, can you win doing that?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, the old saying is that good pitching beats good hitting. Now, Jim Leland, you know, longtime major league manager, very successful guy, one of the most juries, he always had the belief that if I'm facing an ace, I wanted to have as many guys in the lineup that could hit home runs as I could. Because, you know, if I'm facing an ace, what are the chances that I'm going to string three or four hits together in an inning to be able to put up a crooked number? Why not put up, hope I get a walk and somebody hits one out of the ballpark? You know, and what's happened in baseball today, and the reasons why now we have so many home runs and so many strikeouts, is that teams are saying, okay, what's my best way to score a run in an inning? Is it for me to send three hitters to the plate and all three of them get singles, or to send three hitters to the plate and have three of them try to hit home runs? And the belief is that if I have three guys going to the plate trying to hit home runs, I've got a better chance of scoring a run in an inning that I would have guys try to hit singles. And so, you know, the game has changed in that way. And, you know, I don't know that it's gonna, I don't know when or how it's going to change back until maybe strikeouts are so much or they do something to change rules. But I think that we are where we are. Guys have that launch angle now. And the pitch, it used to be that pitchers would do everything they could to keep the ball down in the zone. Now you're throwing it into the hitter's wheelhouse because they've got launch angle to try to lift everything. The high fastball is where you get the swings and misses because players have that hole on that high fastball when they're trying to lift everything. So the game has changed in that way. Yes, strikeouts are more. You know, you can look at players like the Joe DiMaggio's of the world back in the day that, you know, struck out, you know, 18 times in a season, 16 times in a season. We've got guys striking out 160 times in a season, and they're among the best players in the game. It's just changed. You can make the argument it's changed for the better. You can make the argument it's changed for the worse.
Joe DiMaggio struck out 369 times in his career.
Yeah,
Aaron Judge in his third major league season has struck out 364 times.
Yeah,
and that's 27 games his first year. And he's only played 82 this year, so that's less than three seasons, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing what has changed in the game. Yet, you know, like I could look at Mike Trout and think he's one of the best hitters to ever play the game, and people could say, "Wow, look at all the strikeouts." It's just a different game today. Pitchers throw differently. And what happened, DiMaggio played, the starter went 7, 8, 9 innings all the time. And so he got to face the same pitcher for 4 and 5 at-bats a game. Now, you face the starter twice, and then you've got one guy from the left side throwing 97, then a guy from the right side throwing 98, and a guy throwing 100 coming in to pitch the ninth in your last at-bat. And so it has changed a lot. And specialization has taken over a bit, which has led to sort of extremes. It still is, in my mind, one of the most interesting sports out there.
With Steve Phillips, our baseball insider. So Bautista was in town the past couple of nights, and his numbers have been moving up, man. I mean, his plate discipline has been there. He had a few walks on a couple of nights ago, and this is a guy whose stats, I mean, he's always been known for that. He's a guy who hits for power, not as much anymore, but he always had quality plate discipline, and he kind of lost that his last couple of years in Toronto, but seems to have found it a bit in New York with the Mets. Could you see him being a guy that a contending team looks to acquire?
Well, it's tough to know. I mean, I think he's in the right spot right now. And what's going to end up happening is Jay Bruce is going to come back off the DL, and Jonas Suster is going to come back off the DL, and then his playing time is going to get really compromised. I think the benefit to him is that he didn't play every day this year, that he doesn't play every day for the Mets. He's playing fairly regularly, but they spell him here and there. Don Gibbons didn't have any room to rest him. His first day off last year was July 31st. He played every day until July 31st, and he was underwater, never recovered. And that impacted his plate discipline, his swing, his defense, his running the bases, everything. I think that when he is more rested, he's a better player. But the bizarre thing about him, if you look at his splits, he does not hit left-handed pitching. Like, if you're going to add him to your team, the idea is, let me get some right-handed power, then against maybe a big left-handed starting pitcher, I can put him in the lineup to spell my left-handed hitter. But his splits against left-handed pitching were awful the last couple of years, and they're not any better this year. And so, it's hard to know where he would fit with a team down the stretch. The other thing I'll say, though, is that as a teammate, for all the people who had issues with him, in the Mets clubhouse right now, he is a really well-liked and well-respected guy. The game is better for having a minute. There's no question about that. He still can play. He's not what he used to be, but he can still play, and in the right situation, he could fit a potential playoff team, but it's got to be exactly the right situation.
Thank you, Steve. We'll do it again next week.
Okay, you bet. My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Steve Phillips, our MLB insider. I caught up with J.P. Ricciardi. I don't even know if we even ended up playing it a couple of days ago, but he's a special assistant to the GM in New York with the Mets, and he's got obviously a real connection to Bautista. Yeah. He was the GM who acquired him from Pittsburgh here in Toronto, but he said he thinks there's a shot. He's looked pretty good, and you're not going to get much if you're the Mets, but no. If you're a contending team and you add him as a depth piece, and like Steve said, if he's hitting against certain pitchers in certain scenarios.
Well, he's the lightning strike, the lightning strike, right? Mm-hmm. You're not asking him to get three hits in a game. You're asking him to get one big one.
Yeah. Or even a big walk, like analytics in baseball, getting a walk, the value of that has adjusted greatly over the years. So, who knows? We're going to get back into the NBA a little bit later in the hour. We'll try to mix in a couple of more calls. Some news out of Ottawa on Mark Stone, pretty significant news as well. News out of Montreal on Shea Weber.
Johnson will talk about that.
Yeah, we got MJ in just after 6 p.m. And Daniel Negreanu will join us as well at 6:30. He's out of the World Series of Poker, but there was a clip circulating online about him talking about the Tavares signing, and he was wearing a Golden Knights jersey.
During the World Series.
Absolutely. He's sitting there playing in mid-hand or whatever. He probably wasn't actually in a hand at that moment, but talking over the Leafs in the offseason. So we'll catch up with Daniel. We haven't chatted with him in a while. He's coming up in just over an hour. Overdrive delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.
Used it last night.
Attaboy.
That was good.
It's a great app. It's a great website. We're going to use it tomorrow as well. This is a benefit of being in here on Fridays.
What's that?
They hook us up, man. We order food on Friday afternoons.
This is fantastic because right after the show, I'm driving up north.
All right.
So I could eat here.
Make
and
your
go
call.
Straight up.
You talk to Hunt and Mullen. Those guys pull all the strings. So you guys figure out whatever you want to order.
Who are those guys?
Pardon?
Who are those guys? Hunt and Mullen?
Hunt and Mullen.
Who are they?
They are the shooters behind the glass.
This guy's such an idiot here.
Okay. There you go.
Well, that's who they are?
You don't want to mess with them because they will ruin you.
Those two guys back there, that's Hunt and Mullen?
Yeah. Yeah. They will hit you with Phil Kessel clips. They will hit you with Donald Trump clips.
Oh, I know Tyler Hunt. He used to do Leafs Lunch.
Yes. Well, he's been here for a long time.
Yeah, we'll take care of that.
Yeah. So you talk to them. You guys figure out whatever you want to order and... Courtesy of Skip the Dishes.
Nice.
So there you go.
Two nights in a row, two out of 3 days.
Michael Cooper's going to join us here in a few minutes. Five-time NBA champ with the Lakers. Great player. And just get more of a take on the buzz and the vibe in L.A. And, you know, I was thinking about that today because I think it was Mullen who actually brought this up. He's like, what are you thinking in terms of the Tavares conversation? And I'm like, well, I think we keep talking about it. Like, it's only been 4 or 5 days. And I said, what do you think they're talking about in L.A.?
Oh, yeah.
You think they're like, oh, LeBron, who cares now? Let's move on and talk about the Dodgers? No way.
And in L.A., it matters so much, right? Like, the thing about the Gretzky trade in L.A. was just the biggest star in hockey. It can't just be a star. They have to have the biggest star.
Mm.
It's got to be the biggest name.
And that's what they have now with LeBron.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, there's no one bigger in the NBA. Nobody bigger in sports.
He's the biggest name. I guess what I was going to say, is he the best player still?
I think he is. Yeah,
no, I mean...
He's on a short list. I mean, you could argue, you know, Durant, Harden, yeah. Anthony Davis. There's a few guys. But LeBron,
He is, of all the athletes out there that you would pay to see...
Yes. And if I was building a team to win one game tonight, LeBron goes first overall, and it's not even a debate.
Not Steph?
No. Not Steph Curry. I love Steph Curry, but LeBron, he can't do... He can do one thing that LeBron can't do.
Yeah.
You'd shoot the lights out from anywhere, and if he gets hot, nobody can contend with that.
Yeah.
But LeBron's dominance, he can play every single position.
The one thing about basketball that's great is when you go to see a star, you're going to see him.
Mm.
Right?
Oh, and they're playing 40 minutes that night.
Yeah, they play 40 minutes. Now, sometimes they don't play, and that's... That's a real tricky art because you made the comment the other night with Golden State, right? That they're, you know, Steph Curry might only play.
The regular season is irrelevant.
But when people are paying to go to the games,
that's a league issue. That's where the league's got to step
in. When you go
in.
See the Rolling Stones, they don't say, hey, Mick's taking the night off.
Exactly. You can't have that. You're right. It's the exact same thing. If you're buying tickets, like that's why.
Well, the difference is Steve Kerr will argue, I'm not in the entertainment business, I'm in the winning business.
But that's where he's wrong. He is in the entertainment business.
Because you're making millions of dollars.
Absolutely. Then work for free and go work at the YMCA.
Go coach a D-League team or whatever.
Exactly. You are in the entertainment. That's what I've always taken issue with this idea that, well, you can't tell the coaches. Yes, you can. It's very simple. The owner goes to Steve Kerr and says, the next time you do that, you're fired. Guess what's going to happen? He's never going to do it again. This idea that coaches, you can't reason with them.
There's a story about Dale Hunter in Washington that Ted Leonsis went to him when Dale Hunter was coaching and said, can we be a little more up-tempo?
Very different story.
And Dale said, yeah, I'll coach any way you want. We'll lose every night. And right. I'm going back to London anyway. Right. It doesn't matter to me.
Exactly. He knew he was leaving. He came in halfway through the season. He was playing with house money. That's one extreme example. In general, owners can tell the coaches exactly what to do. I mean, for the most part, you're not going to go in and be like, I want this guy playing this position, this amount of minutes. But in terms of something fundamental, like sitting guys on major ESPN games or TNT games, owners could step in if they wanted to. They just don't.
Has any city had more big stars in L.A.?
Well, I mean, I'm sure New York
New York hasn't had, who's the greatest Nick?
Well, you probably go back to like Frazier or something
like
that.
Yeah, but he wasn't. Mm-hmm. He was a star.
Well, I guess Boston might actually be able
Boston
to contend.
Might be,
because they've got, you know, from a football perspective. Now, L.A. had some greats back in the day, but like Brady, nothing can meet Brady.
Right.
Nothing in the history of L.A.
And the Red Sox have one of the greatest hitters of all time, you know.
The Sox have more greats than the Dodgers, I think. I mean, it might be close. Obviously, no one can compete with the Yankees. The Yankees are clearly number one.
But Koufax still is an icon.
Mm-hmm. As he should be, for sure. But so is, you know, Teddy Baseball.
And Jackie Robinson was a Dodger.
Mm-hmm. But that's kind of bringing in a different conversation.
We talk about stars.
Yeah.
Jackie Robinson is as big a baseball star, as big a name.
I don't know if I would call... I don't know if star is even appropriate. Like, he was a great player, but he represented something that was so much bigger than glitz in celebrity. You know what I'm saying?
Sorry, our callers are waiting.
Well, let's try to mix in a couple here. Carlos in Windsor, you've been holding for a long time. Thank you for doing that.
Long distance.
Thank you for joining us. What's up, Carlos?
I'll make it pretty quick here. Gord, I'll be honest with you. I was behind you Monday. Like, I love Johnny Tavares coming to Toronto. It's fantastic. I'm Portuguese, so I gotta love the guy. You know, you gotta represent here. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, well, what Gord is saying makes sense. Yep, that makes sense too. And yeah, that makes sense too. I mean, I got twins, and I teach my kids at a young age the importance of money. And I always tell them the bill always comes due after the meal. And it's good, but I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to be able to keep everybody here, no?
Well, I think, you know, you're going to be able to keep some, but the question's going to be, can you keep enough and be good enough on defense? You know, my point is, and I cribbed it from some cap people and other GMs, but they've got three defensemen signed after this season. They got three defense, and Dermott's one of them.
Mm-hmm. So, well, but you know, that's bearing the lead, though. Morgan Riley is also one of them.
Yeah, he is.
So you got a point. It's not like they have Roman Polak and Ron Hainsey.
No, but you're going to have to. So if you've got take off the contract for Nathan Horton, $45 million committed to nine guys. That's no Matthews, no Nylander, no Marner, three defensemen, one goalie. So say Matthews gets 11. Now you're 10 guys at $56 million. If the cap's 82...
No, it's going to be complicated.
You got 26...
Every team is dealing with this.
And Kyle Dubas said to us that they run the contingencies and they've made all the...
He's very
confident they'll figure it out. And most teams are. Like, people are asking, how can Tampa be in an Erik Karlsson?
Exactly.
Well, they can...
But it's also a problem every GM in the league would take. Now, I don't know which GMs you were talking to. I would guess they would take this in a heartbeat. I think it's really easy to be the GM of Team X that doesn't have a shot at a cup and that maybe has some cap flexibility to be like, to throw stones. Meanwhile, if they were in this position, they'd be like, oh, we would have taken Tavares in a heartbeat. We called and he wouldn't even take our meeting. Yeah, I think that's happening a lot throughout the league. And I think it happens... Probably 20 to 25 teams have those takes on the top 5 to 10 teams, but they would flip positions in a heartbeat.
But the same GMs are saying, man, St. Louis made a good deal to get Ryan O'Reilly.
How so?
Because they didn't
I would take Tavares at 11 over O'Reilly at 7.5.
Well, because they didn't give up a top, well, in terms of, this is a trade versus a free agent signing, so hard to compare one to the other.
Right.
But they're just saying in terms of trade, like, I'm not saying GMs are always critical of what other teams do. A lot of them are saying...
Well, of course they are. I'm sure they all are. I'm sure Dubas is critical of what people are doing.
I'm saying they're quite often not critical. Quite often they'll say, hey, that was a good move by so-and-so. I think so-and-so did a good
thing.
On
the record, maybe.
No, off the record. Like, when you're just talking to them.
I find that hard to believe, but okay.
They'll say, you know, hey, that team made a good move, that team made a good trade. The question becomes, and everyone reaches that point where you run into the cap bottle, right? The cap reaper is out there for everybody. So... What do you have when the Reaper comes?
Right. But I would counter that with, I'll take a really good team / great team and maybe have some troubles over a mediocre team and be like, hey, I got $12 million in cap space. Great. You're a mediocre team.
So and Kyle said to us, and you got an insight yesterday from Kyle Dubas, they believe that their defense
is better
than people give them. So
right.
If you believe that, if that's...
And they can draft and develop. People forget about that.
Well,
that doesn't come up enough.
That player that you draft won't help you for 4 years.
Not necessarily.
That defenseman you draft now probably isn't an everyday player for 4 years.
Maybe. We got Michael Cooper on the line, 5-time NBA champ in the Lakers, head coach of Three's Company in the Big Three League. He's going to be up in Toronto later in the month and making his debut on Overdrive, and here he is. How you doing, Michael?
Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
We're doing really well.
You were a great player, man. I loved watching you play.
Thank you.
I love your Twitter handle, at Showtime Cooper. How'd you get that one?
My wife actually made that up for me.
Really?
Good for her.
So do you have a presence on Twitter? Like, are you constantly tracking Twitter? Were you using it to find out what was going on with LeBron or what?
You know what? Personally, I don't get too involved with that because I got other things going. So every now and then I'll jump on there. But my wife pretty much handles that. That's fun. I'm still trying to catch up with today's technology. I just learned how to email about 4 months ago. So really? I'm in the game almost.
Okay, so you're not worried about, like, burner accounts. It's not going to be like a Brian Colangelo situation, will it? Or
never happened to me.
Okay.
You're off the hook.
Yeah, I think you're okay. So, what's the reaction? You were a longtime great Laker and five-time NBA champ, and you're close with Magic. What do you make of this news, LeBron heading to L.A.?
I think it's great. At first, I was a little hesitant about it because I don't think the Laker organization, all the things that we've been through, the changes we've made, and the greatness that we have achieved as an organization, Dr. Buss being at the helm, had to woo anybody. I think our organization, along with many more in the NBA, have a great, great attraction. And obviously being in California where LeBron had put his kids and things we had heard prior to this happening, kind of knew he was heading this way, but I think it's a great situation for the Lakers. As long as we don't have to tear up our core, and I think Magic did an excellent job, he, Rob, and Jeannie, with the decision-making of this, because we got some good, young, talented players here in Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma, and I think you need to put some people around them to show these young kids how to win, how to be experienced NBA players, how to be professional players, and I think they went out and did that. I think, obviously, LeBron was the first piece. I kind of would have likened Paul George to come with that, but, you know, everybody has to do what they do. But the pieces that they put, Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevens, I think are pieces that LeBron can not control in a way, but lead, I'll say. Lead to learn these players how to compete against the Warriors. Right now it's going to be competing at a high level because they're not ready to win a championship, but championship ability can be done in the making. And I think they got a great nucleus, and I don't think they're finished yet. There's some more moves up our sleeves. Obviously, Kawhi is a real good attraction, and what happens with that will be determined by San Antonio. But right now you can see that The front office, the hierarchies, Magic, Rob, and Jeannie are heading the Laker organization back to prominence, back to winning championships in the very near future.
So, Michael, do you think that this puts the Lakers in the same orbit as Golden State, Houston?
No, it doesn't. I think it puts us in a great playoff position. I think every year, had this not happened, I'm going to go out on that limb every year and say, hey, the Lakers are a playoff team, which I think they are, but they're playing for those low seeds, 7-8, 8-7-6. I think where this puts the Lakers now, it moves them up the ring a little bit to like a 6-5, and I think LeBron himself can go get us 20, 25 wins. Obviously, basketball is a team sport, but the things that LeBron did in the playoffs, he'll be able to do that in the regular season with ease. And in the process, showing our younger players, this is how you guys do it. Because remember, he left Cleveland to go to Miami to learn how to win a championship. And when he did it there, he went back to Cleveland, and he was able to do that there. So I think that's the case here. He's going to be doing it. You got some other great tested champions, and Rajon Rondo, I think that'll be great, simply because it'll take the ball out of LeBron's hands where he doesn't have it 95, 97% of the time. And sometimes he can get a rest on the offensive end. So I think what it has done is for the Lakers, it puts us in a good position. And Golden State is our testing stick. Houston's our testing stick. How we compete with them will determine if we get there when the time comes in the playoffs that we'll be able to compete at a high level with them, if not win.
With Michael Cooper, five-time NBA champ of the Lakers, currently head coach of Three's Company in the Big Three League. He and that league will be in Toronto later this month. And he joins us here.
Yeah,
baby,
we're going to be there.
Yeah, man. So, do you hang with Ice Cube in L.A. or what? Like, we had him on the show last month. What's that like, working with Ice Cube?
I'm a senior citizen when I'm not coaching. I'm strictly a homebody, living, spending time with my wife and family. But, you know what, this is pick three is something special. I didn't really know what I was getting into. And I kind of, like most people, because I saw some games last year, looked at it as kind of like a gimmick, but it's not a gimmick. There's a vision for this league. It's something that's going to take over really big. It's going to be an Olympic sport in 2020. So Cube has he set this thing up right. And now that I'm involved in it, I see the competitive nature. May not be at the level of the NBA, but still guys go out there and they compete at a high level. And you got to understand, it's half court. There's not all that running, so it's a lot easier to compete at the more physical level.
Basketball, all that running, I'm in favor of it. Michael, I want to ask you this. You played for one of the greatest NBA teams of all time, and you played against another one a lot of the time in Boston. And Michael Jordan's team, you know, had arch rivals. Is Golden State and its dominance good for the NBA or not?
I think it's great. I think a team, especially, and you know, the same thing was said on the women's side with Coach Gino, you know, why is he winning all the time? Well, you see that's changed a lot now because teams have to step up to the plate. If you want to win a championship, you have to do all the things to do. Golden State has done that. And I think, and this is just my personal opinion, I think if they get to the playoffs this year with the additions that they've made to their team, they're going to win it again because that team knows how to play. All the main players hold each other accountable. And you know what? Coach Kerr, his job of coaching that team is very, very minimal. And his becomes more into effect when the actual games start. But for practice and preparation for the game, and sometimes in the course of a game, he doesn't have to say much. You just have to make the right moves, manage the players, and stay on those officials because those guys hold each other accountable and they make the action happen. And it reminds me so much of our Laker days in the 80s. Is that myself, Magic, Kareem, well, not so much Kareem, Kareem didn't talk much, but Worthy, is we could get each other together without Pat Riley having to say anything.
Well, enjoy your time up here in Toronto and enjoy what's going on with the Lakers as well. We're all excited to see what LeBron brings, and I think a lot of people in the city looking forward to the big three rolling through as well. So enjoy that, and thank you for doing this today, Michael.
Hey, is this Brian or Gord?
This is Brian who just said that. Yeah,
Brian,
Gord's with
you
me.
You really don't sound excited about the Lakers, but that's okay because I know Toronto was a tough year for them.
Yeah.
Everybody expected them to go all the way.
Michael, this is Gord. You just hit Brian where he lives.
I'm ready to go now. Now, I'll give you some excitement because I'm excited that LeBron is out of the East. I'm excited that he's left the Eastern Conference.
You sounded like a human being now. You got a little perk about you. Before it was like just a ho-hum. But thank you, Brian. I really appreciate that. And you will be seeing us one time for sure up in Toronto and then when they come to Los Angeles.
All right, you got it. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, guys.
This is Michael Cooper. I think that was a compliment, but I'm not sure about that.
He played great defense, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Well, here's the truth about the LeBron scenario. I would be concerned that he's not as committed to winning as he used to be. And for a number of reasons. One, he always used to take one-year deals for a couple of different reasons. One, keep the organization honest. And two, give him flexibility. If it's not working, I'm out of here. I'm going to win somewhere else. Signs a four-year deal. It's like a lifetime achievement deal for LeBron.
Well, but
so no pressure on him or the Lakers.
Though, can you honestly say when he plays, I saw him play one of his worst ever games. His last game was a Cleveland Cavalier the first time around in the playoffs in Boston. He was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the few bad games he's ever played. Like he's an intense guy.
He is, but he's also played more minutes than I believe anybody in the history of the game are real close to it. He's coming off a season where he played every single game last year and a ton of minutes.
He's in unbelievable shape.
He is, but now he's in the Western Conference. Yeah. You know, you're not playing Atlanta and the Pistons. And
so how do you feel? Like, just imagine this. There was a thing yesterday about Oklahoma City. They just hit $300 million in payroll.
Mm-hmm.
They're the highest payroll in the NBA. So say the Lakers are the fourth seed in the West, or say San Antonio is, whoever it is. So you win your first round series, or say you're the fifth seed. So your first round series might be Golden State. No, your first round series would be against San Antonio.
The fourth seed. The second would be.
Now you probably get Houston.
I don't know what Oklahoma City's doing. I really don't. I think they had to bring back Paul George.
Oklahoma City in the first round, Houston in the second, and then Golden State's waiting for you.
Right, and there are other good teams. Like Portland's a good team. Utah's a really good up and coming team.
Yesterday, Bruce Arthur said that every active MVP in the league is in the Western Conference.
Right, I believe so. I don't remember the stat that he spit out. But,
yeah, but I mean,
but that's not, again, that's not saying much because it's Durant, Curry, Westbrook, LeBron. Harden, and LeBron. Like those are the guys who've won everything.
They're on the same conference.
They are. Yeah, and that's again why I don't know. I think LeBron, he's been lured to LA because of what LA represents. It's a family move. I would be concerned that he might lose some edge.
I saw him play here in Toronto last season, not this past season, but the year before, and had floor seats. We had real good seats. And it's incredible to watch him play basketball. Because if you play off him, he just drives by you. If you get in his face...
Oh, he's maybe the greatest physical specimen we've ever seen.
If you lay back, he can hit the three on you. He can drive on you. He can do... He plays great defense. He's so intimidating.
Mm. Oh, him running down the court, it's like thunder. You can
When Hunt says gotta go, does that mean we have to leave? Gotta go.
I don't know why he's telling you that. He didn't tell me that, but anyway,
that's why he's hanging by a thread.
Yeah, MJ coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll get into the Shea Weber news. We'll get into the Mark Stone news in Ottawa, and Daniel Negreanu will join us around 6:30. All right, Mike Johnson coming up. He'll be in studio in the 6 p.m. hour. Shea Weber.
He's going to do like 50 Montreal games this year.
That's going to be, well, I mean, it's all Carey Price. That's it. Carey Price, he has to win the Vezina next year. I would argue, most pressure of any player in the league is on Carey Price. His deal kicks in, I believe, $10.5 million starting this year. Team is awful around him. Shea Weber's their best player up front or on the back end outside of Price.
Well, if they trade Pacioretty.
Might trade Pacioretty. I just don't see
that
it.
That was a bad deal today. So they threw Dr. David Mulder out there, the team physician, to talk about the Weber surgery.
Yeah, which is a weaselly move. Like Bergevin's got to get out there.
The GM's got to be out there.
He's got to be out there.
As you made the point, he knew 2 weeks ago.
He knew, man. He went under the knife on like June 19th or whatever.
Yeah.
And they intentionally waited to get this out. Like, you know that it was absolutely planned. Make sure Bergevin gets in and gets out because they know what the reaction is going to be in Montreal. Weber's not going to play until December or January. He's coming off a foot surgery and now a meniscus surgery. And it's not his fault, but he's connected to PK Subban.
No, he is.
And he always will be. And they're coming off an absolutely abysmal year, and he's a huge part of their team, and now he's not going to be on the ice the first 25 or 30 games at least. It's a mess. So we'll get into that, and Daniel Negreanu will join us. He's out of the World Series of Poker. Spoiler alert, but we haven't caught up with Daniel in a while.
He's a great guy. Huge hockey fan.
Big hockey fan. Toronto guy. But I want to ask him that. Are you more a Golden Knights fan than you are a Maple Leaf fan? Because I know he's big into the Golden Knights as well. I believe he's a ticket holder.
Yeah. He was one of the first guys that announced he bought season
behind tickets. The push and to get them here and during the ticket drive and all that. So that's coming up in the final hour. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.